Good morning. I'm going to try the clicker. Liz, what's wrong with my clicker? There. Now, I'm sure many of you have seen this series, Who Do You Think You Are? It's one of my favorite TV series. Famous faces trace their family tree. We've had Danny Dyer discovering that he's related to Edward III. We've had Jeremy Paxman, surprisingly weeping at the fate of his distant relatives. Craig Revel Hallward discovering that his great-grandfather was an Australian clog dancing champion. My favorite was the actor John Hurt, who was desperate to be Irish and was very sad that he actually wasn't Irish. Maybe you've traced your family trees and discovered some interesting characters. But I reckon if we all go back far enough, we will have one thing in common. We had ancestors who worked on the land. Agricultural laborers, farmers, poachers, mentioning no names, drovers, tenant farmers, woodland workers, dairymaids, cowmen, and I'm sure some of you were very definitely descended from peasants. again, no names. I didn't do that at the 8:30 because I didn't think they'd laugh. Our ancestors, not so long ago, they were connected to the rhythm of the land, to the seasons. Their landmarks were Lady Day, Michaelmas, Christmas Day. Now, our landmarks are a little bit different, I think. The start of the football season is the end of summer. The start of Strictly means that it's autumn, and I'm a Celebrity means that it's almost Christmas. Now, for our ancestors, this time of year, harvest was especially important. They celebrated Christmas and Easter. Those were festivals you marked. But harvest was about life and death. The whole life of the village, the town, and the country depended on the harvest. In the 18th and 19th centuries, when the last load of hay was safely brought in, the cart was decorated with greenery, flowers, and ribbons. It was a moment of celebration and relief. And just hopped on a bit too much there. So this painting from the 1870s depicts the dangers of the harvest for the harvest workers. Now, for many centuries, there was a tradition that ordinary folk were allowed to glean what the harvesters had missed. They would look for crops that had escaped their attention. Mostly it was women and children who would scour the fields, and it was worth it. Sometimes you could find enough grain to keep a family in flour for the whole winter. And these are rituals that people in the Bible would recognize. In Old Testament times, and until recently in this country, life for most people was precarious. There was an old country saying, "Success to the farmer, the plow and the flail, may the landlord flourish and the tenant never fail." And this is a picture. This is Westcott, just over 100 years ago, still harvesting by hand. And even as late as the 1900s, you could get a day off school to harvest the potato crop because it was that important. I love the chap on the left. He doesn't look that impressed about the job that he's been given. So for all our sophisticated learning, our Bible courses, our Bible notes and so on, our ancestors would have understood the Bible much better than we do. Jesus' parables about sowing, about the mustard seed, and even the feeding of the 5,000, people prepared to give away their bread and fish for others, would have had an immediacy, a relevance. Now, each month we're looking at the Lord's Prayer. Today, it's the line, "Give us this day our daily bread," for obvious reasons. It's a plea. It acknowledges a dependence on God to provide for us. Now, we don't have to worry about our daily bread. We have Waitrose, we have Lidl, we have Sainsbury's. We are incredibly blessed. We're the most affluent and comfortable generation in the history of mankind. It may not always feel like that, but it's true. Bible verses would have leapt out at our ancestors who relied on the land, who were dependent on good weather and kind seasons. Like this verse that Hannah's going to read from us from Ecclesiastes. That I'm sure you'll recognize.
It's from Ecclesiastes 3. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to uproot. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to tear down, and a time to build. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones, and a time to gather them. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain. A time to search, and a time to give up. A time to keep, and a time to throw away. A time to tear, and a time to mend. A time to be silent, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time for war, and a time for peace.
Thank you. These verses are saying that we are all subject to times and changes over which we have no control. I think for us this is often hard to comprehend, that sort of vulnerability. In life, there will be everything. There will be good times and there will be bad times. It's an uncomfortable lesson for us, but perhaps not so much for previous generations who knew life could be harsh. Maybe not for people in the world who have less than us, and for those who will be receiving the harvest gifts we brought today. I used to share a BBC office with the BBC correspondent Michael Burke. We used to have some lively discussions. And he talked about once about the people in Africa that he'd met, obviously famously, his reports in Ethiopia led to Live Aid. And he couldn't get around the fact that people who had nothing very often never lost their faith in God. And I suggested that maybe the difficult reality of their lives focused them on what mattered. But I wanted someone else's opinion, someone wiser than me who's lived amongst people who live on the land and are dependent on it. And so I contacted the lovely and much missed Naomi Sosa from Packwood Partners. And she emailed me a story about a lady called Zira who lost everything in the recent floods in West Papua. So Naomi said, "For the first few days, Zira cried and shouted at God, questioning her situation. After that, she made a decision that what she'd lost didn't matter as long as she was alive. She was able to see God despite the suffering, that she had enough to eat, that people cared. Every day she gives thanks to God for saving her and providing her and other refugees through what she sees as miracles every day. That is where she found her strength and she worked tirelessly to help others." What we've seen, Naomi says, is that when people have very little, they rely on God to a very deep level to live every day. They have nothing else. Unfortunately, as people grow in wealth, faith often becomes less important. Owning things, having security and so on means we don't have to. Naomi concludes, "How can we hold our faith while still having other securities? Can we ever be fully dependent on God while also focusing on wealth and power? It's one of the really radical things about God and why it's easier, in some ways, to follow God when you have nothing to give up. But we can romanticize poverty. I always wonder where the balance is." It is indeed a tricky balance. I don't want to dismiss our affluence. It's been hard won through ingenuity and enterprise. It's our good fortune to live in this part of the world. But I think it's come at a cost. I think we've lost something, an understanding of the Bible, but also something more fundamental, understanding the precariousness of life. The harvest is still, of course, important, still vital to farmers. They can have a bad year, but we are shielded from it. Prices may rise, but supermarkets can find the products elsewhere. To a great extent, we in the West can control our world, the temperature of our houses, our diet, our travel. This has come at another cost. One of those is clearly global warming, and who knows what the future may bring. Maybe our descendants will be more like the people who worked on the land in the past. I agree with Naomi that our self-reliance can be a hindrance to faith. So what can we do? We are where we are. We can acknowledge our vulnerability. Some of us I know are going through a tough time, very tough times, only too aware of the precariousness of life and health. They don't need me to talk about the fragility of life. So I merely suggest a reminder to take God at his word. The book of Proverbs says in chapter 5, verse 3, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight." The word trust here in Hebrew actually means to cling to. Recognize that life is fragile and cling to God. Give us each day our daily bread. I read a story about the relief effort to help children at the end of the Korean War in the 1950s. In one South Korean orphanage, the children were restless and anxious at night and had difficulty sleeping. As the charity workers talked to the children, they soon discovered that even though they had three meals a day, the children worried about whether they would have food the next day. So the relief workers decided that each night, when the children were put to bed, they would place a single piece of bread in each child's hand. The bread wasn't intended to be eaten. It was simply there to be held by the children as they went to sleep, like a security blanket, reminding them that there would be food the next day for them. And it worked. The bread calmed the children's anxieties and helped them sleep. So let me leave you with that image. Children who know that life can be fragile, clinging on to what's important. It was that that gave them peace. Let us do the same. Lord, give us this day our daily bread. Amen.
Many thanks to Jonathan. In the offertory collection, there will be for the cash collection will be for the work of the Dorking Area Food Bank. And it does seem incredible, does it not, in the 21st century in Britain, in Dorking, that we need these food bank. But apparently we do. Kay Meldrum, our treasurer, helps at the food bank, and she just tells me that in just 1 week recently, 29 adults and 11 children were